I'm Eric.
This is Josh.
Hi. Today we're, Today we're talking about several attacks around RFID, specifically RFID tags that we'll go into detail about that are used to access facilities. Not so much for cars that are used for buses and amusement parks, things like that. Yep. So a quick little agenda, we'll kind of go through a high level around red teaming, the type of attacks that we do. Traditional attacks and techniques you guys have heard about for years now, specifically RFID attacks is what we're doing today. Then we'll talk about some advanced attacks we've been able to develop ourselves, and then some mitigation and remediation things that you guys can do to protect against some of these things we're showing. So about LARES, myself and my partner Chris Nickerson started LARES about 6 years ago. Since then we've been doing a lot of big things in the industry, but something we've been proud of now for a couple years is we put together something called, with a lot of other people in the community, put together something called the Penetration Testing Execution Standards. So if you guys have any questions around pen testing, the process of it, how it works, details around it, check that out. We've also done lots of other things that are boring to read, so move on. Myself, I'm one of the owners of LARES. I'm also a principal consultant and also a co-owner of a company called Layer 8 Labs that we just launched this week. So when you guys get a chance, check that out as well. You got an important call?
Not anymore.
Josh? Hey, my name's Joshua Perryman. I came on with LARES about almost a year ago. I think we worked this out at DEF CON last year. I'm also a senior partner with Layer8Labs.com. If you guys want to check it out, we just released a new user attack framework. That's about it.
Yep. So, quick little funny slide, but really says a lot about what we do. We've been lucky enough to build a company around our hobbies and our passions and then get paid for it. So that's why LARES was started and that's why everybody loves working there. Specifically today, we're talking about red team testing. Red team testing has a huge definition that I don't care to read, but the analogy behind it that we always use is red team testing puts you in the ring, puts you in a fight. You can't know, you can't have an idea of how well you can defend in a fight until you get in the ring and fight. So everyone does things in the labs, does things, you know, back on their own company itself, but until you actually put yourself against an adversary, you don't know how well you're going to stand up against it. And things we're showing today is true adversarial modeling. Reasons to conduct it, pretty straightforward, right? Show real impact to the business from physical, social, electronic, whatever it might be, all the different ways that it can be compromised. Just a quick little summary of how red team testing works. It's red team testing, the idea behind it is blended attacks, right? Where social, electronic, or electronic, physical, or all three come together, that's where red team focuses. So today we're showing one component of that, which will be direct physical attacks, and those could lead to things like physical access to the facility, then would lead to electronic access, or we're gonna be showing some things around blended attacks. So we may compromise something electronically and get to a badge system, which is what we're gonna show here in a little bit. And once we have badge system access, then we can maybe get physical access after. So traditional attacks that we're not gonna bore you with, you guys have heard things like lock picking and tailgating and shimming and, you know, impressioning and bumping and all these other cool things. What we're focusing on today is just RFID.
Which in those attacks, they work really well, right? But they're traditionally kind of loud in nature, mm-hmm. So you can't always pull those attacks off. So what we're gonna show is hacking RFID where it beeps and you walk in, basically.
Yeah, because what we've seen throughout the years now doing this is who's gonna stop you if you beep into a door and the door opens and you walk in? Chances are no one's gonna question you, right? So if you can get yourself a badge, you can actually make a valid badge. Maybe you're lucky enough to get a picture on it or a picture in the badge system through a blended attack. Who's gonna stop you once you're in the building?
All right, so we're just going, we're not gonna get real deep into the details. I'm sure a lot of people, you know, understand RFID by now. So what we're gonna cover is low frequency and high frequency. We don't get into the UHF stuff. So low frequency are the Prox cards, the older first badges. There are a lot of times the card is actually a lot thicker. And the other one, or HF, is high frequency. So the iClass stuff with encryption that we're really into, it's 13.56 megahertz. Next.
It's page now. Just do page now.
So who uses it? 80% or 70 to 80% of people that have badges actually use the old unencrypted Prox badges. Who is vulnerable? Government facilities, medical facilities, financial institutions, nuclear, power and water facilities, education, a lot of those are the old Prox stuff, right? So they haven't even gotten over to the iClass encrypted stuff, which we're going to own in a minute. So understanding badge systems. So here are the four main components of a badge system. Of course, it's a lot smaller version, but this is applicable to all badge installations. You have the card, which is powered by the reader. So think of it as shining a flashlight into a mirror. The reader is actually putting the power out. That is sent. It powers the card. The card then sends its information back over to the reader. That gets sent back to a controller. And the host PC or the badge system, for instance, it's hooked in to the controller, and that data is sent to the badge system, and it makes its logic decisions based on the facility code and card data sent to it.
Hold on a second. So something we brought today to demo some of the cloning that we're going to be doing, a company out of Lithuania, Midpoint Security, actually builds badge demo systems. Whatever components you want to include in it, you can buy, put together, have an on-rig set up in your lab you can do your own testing with. Here we've got one of the new edge readers from HID. We've also got a multi-class, so we can do both the frequencies Josh was talking about. And then you can simulate things like, you know, push to exit, break an alarm if you actually bypass a door, shim a lock, under door hook it, whatever it might be, you can simulate alarm. As well as push to exit with a mag release. So just for demonstration purposes, we got a full badge system and software running to demonstrate the things we're going to be doing.
Yep, and this is the newer edge system, as Eric said. So it is, the one we just shown is more of the older traditional style. So this is what HID is moving to. Power over Ethernet, it's got a lot of services on it, a lot of web app stuff listening. So a big attack surface with this new system as well. So. Again, like we mentioned, we're really not interested in the ski passes or anything like that. We're just focused on the badges that get you into physical facilities. So this slide shows the most common badges used. So again, the 70 to 80% of the badges are procs, the old unencrypted stuff. So then there's companies that are, you know, newer facilities that are buying new stuff, because that's the thing, right, with badge systems is a lot of that's tied into the facility. So if you have an old building, it's typically going to be the older stuff, right? Unless somebody goes in and redoes it, because it's a real pain in the ass to come in and run all new readers and hook all the new stuff up. So anyway, this shows kind of the layout of how the antennas are, and you'll see on the proc stuff, the antenna is a lot bigger than the I-class, but that's all built inside the card with the integrated circuit. So read ranges, so here's a limitation if you're using off-the-shelf hardware. So the proc stuff and even I-class, 12 inches.
I mean, if 3 inches usually.
Yeah, it's typically 3 inches if you use a...
Like this reader right here, I mean, you have to get pretty close before it reads it, right?
You almost have to touch it. So what we have here, this is a parking deck reader, and they sell these for both procs and I-class, so it's a lot bigger footprint. But again, if you're using just off-the-shelf stuff, you're limited to that. And Ohm did a badass talk about making this long range. So what we want to say is don't think about you're just limited to what, you know, hardware is on eBay. You get with some guys, you do some research, and we're talking 10 to 25 feet, maybe more.
Yeah.
So...
And just with a garage reader that you buy from eBay or you buy from HID, it's anywhere from 1.5 to 2 feet, which if you think about it, that's me walking up to Josh and asking for a smoke, right? Or asking for a light. I'm that close to him, I can get a read on this card. So that in your backpack, in a clipboard, whatever it might be, a satchel, if you're European, you can walk up and read somebody's card if you're a couple inches away.
So all this is built around the Wigan protocol. So if you go back thinking to the slide earlier, we present the reader with the card. Once the card does its translation, it's all Wigan clear text from the reader itself back to the back end system. So what that looks like is this shows you the layout. Wigan is a falling signal, so the signal will be flatlined, and then when it actually receives a bit, it drops down. So falling edge is how we identify those signals in the Arduino. And the last thing I want to leave you with on this slide, there's three things that you need to get into a facility. You got to know the bit length, the type of card that it is, so 35-bit corporate 1000 or 26-bit or a custom 46-bit.
Usage. Or low frequency, high frequency, whatever kind of card it may be. And you can identify those things through various ways. We'll talk about some of that.
Yeah. So this shows the layout of the card. So there's always a start bit, a start or parity bit at the front of the card. And then you have the facility code and then the user code. So it depends on what card type it is about how long those can be. So obviously a custom 46-bit is going to provide you with a lot longer facility code and a lot longer user code.
So three major components, those things should be sensitive and private, right? Well, one of the things we found through a lot of the research we were doing in development around some of these things is the information is not so private. Because of the way HID structures their ordering process and reseller process, you can actually go on eBay, buy extra cards that companies are selling. And the sad part about it is, I don't know if you can see it, but printed on the box, which is displayed in high quality pictures on eBay, is the facility code and the card numbers that are in range for what they bought, probably in excess. So right there alone, we have a facility code for a particular person on eBay. Everybody knows through OSINT, you can typically find somebody through social media, whatever it might be. So chances of us finding who that card belongs to and what company they can probably get access to, pretty probable, right? Also, go back one more. The way HID sells their cards is in a series in sequence numbers. So if you run out of cards, you have more employees, you're hiring more people. You call HID up or your reseller up, and they send you another 500 cards, 1,000 cards, whatever it might be. Then all of a sudden you have budget cuts, you need to sell some cards, whatever it might be, like this guy, and you decide to go sell 100 of your cards. What we'll show later is if we have a valid card number, we can also do bruting, and we can display, say, access card number 6,000. Well, if I know 6,000 is a valid card, chances are 6,100 or maybe back 100 are valid cards as well. So if they've if they're selling excess off of eBay and they have an extra 500 cards, chances are 500 back or 400 back, you're probably gonna get a valid hit. So just through intelligence gathering, just through looking at what's available, you can probably connect the dots and find out where those cards belong and who they might have access to. So data's not so private. If you have the opportunity to actually get a picture of somebody's card, if you can get it in your hands or you have a nice lens on your camera, you get a picture of somebody's card, they're printed on the bottom of the card a lot of times to actually say some kind of order number. Well, there's third-party sites out there that are a reseller of HID products, and you can give them the order number, and they'll look up the number for you and say, this is facility code, and this is card number, and they'll ship you more cards. Well, now I've used a reseller to ship me cards that have a valid facility code just by a picture I took. So use someone else to do your identification.
All right, so now we're going to get into the actual hands-on stuff, which is the cool part. So the first thing that we're going to talk about is cloning and replaying low-frequency cards. So again, these are unencrypted, used by 70 to 80% of the facilities globally or in the United States. So again, a lot of those are critical infrastructure that still use this old technology.
And you guys have probably heard about this in previous talks. Prox 2 has been around for years. It's been vulnerable for years. It's all unencrypted. You can sniff the authentication to the reader. You can do cloning. You can do replay. So just wanted to give a little primer on what we're leading up to, which is the encrypted stuff. Anybody ever heard of Proxmark 3s? Pretty common tools to use for RFID hacking. They have the ability to do both low frequency and high frequency based on the kind of antenna that you hook to it. Not too expensive if you buy the knockoff versions out of China, or you can spend a little more money and get them from the vendor. These will work really nice. So here we have a valid Prox 2 that works on the badge system. You'll see a successful authentication. Maglock opens up. So what we're gonna do is we take standard stock firmware that's on a Proxmark 3, do an actual read on the card, possibly, and get red. We'll see. Put it in replay mode. Or not. First fail.
DMO.
Does that open the door?
No, this card doesn't.
Yeah, it does.
All right. Lies.
All right, let's put it in record mode. This is awesome. Really.
So what should be happening is a Proxmark 3 out of the box, no custom software or anything on it. You can put it into record mode. So it gets, if you get within distance of the badge, you can record it, and then it just turns around and replays it to the badge reader.
Hold on, this bitch is working. Record. Really?
Eric.
We just spent 2 hours testing everything in the back.
Oh, that's the way it works. Anytime you try to give a live demo, it never works right.
Oh, I got it this time. Yeah, it's awesome.
Next.
So, part we were getting to was when that does work, we've been able to conceal it, right? You can't walk up to a building with a Proxmark 3 in your hand and an antenna like an idiot and try to badge in. Someone's going to probably question you. Put them inside things that don't block the RFID signals. Plastic clipboards work great. We found through years of red team testing, if you got a clipboard in your hand and a pen, maybe put a collar shirt on, no one's going to stop you anyway. Put a badge inside of it with that thing in replay mode, walk up, badge in. So that was the point of that demo that just worked awesome.
Anyway, the next thing you can do with that is you can take a custom firmware and upload it to the Proxmark and have Proxbrute that works. So what Proxbrute does, again, like Eric mentioned, so say we need there's three pieces of data that we have to have: the card type, the facility code, and the user ID. So for this attack, we configure the card type, we configure the facility code, and then we brute force the user space. So essentially what this does, if we know that, say, I mean, I have data center access, but Eric doesn't have data center access. And so if you have his card space and know that the user ID is 100, then you start there. And what essentially what this does is every so many seconds, it goes through and presents a facility code and user ID, just like you're badging in. And eventually you'll either get hit or get caught.
Yeah, right? One or two. Usually you'll get a hit.
Yeah, hopefully.
And the one thing to note when you're doing Proxbrute, it's a custom version of firmware to put on the Proxmark 3, so reflash it, custom firmware has Proxbrute built in. Once you have it on there, adjust the timings. By default, it's really noisy, really fast, and the readers can't either successfully or fail an authentication. So lower your timing a bit, and then you won't get as many false negatives. So this is Josh's baby. We pulled some influence from a lot of different places. Again, a lot of the things we're showing here today aren't necessarily O'Days on HID. They're things that have been out for a long time, but they're also things that people have talked about and talked about in small aspects of attacking some kind of company. Today, we're talking about how to combine all the things that we're doing to put into a blended attack and a full scope test.
Exactly. Now, our saying is from the labs to the street. So everything we show you has been tested real world, live, for clients, and we know it works.
Other than that,
other than the Proxmark,
right there.
Somebody owned.
Yeah, I'll just tell somebody to open the door and they'll open it.
Yeah.
So, giving credit where credit's due, Bishop Fox actually did a talk, I believe, last year at Black Hat on a Tastic reader he put together. Simple garage, parking garage type reader hooked up to his own version of an Arduino with his own code. And he was doing low signal reads or low frequency reads from about 1.5 to 2 feet away. Limitation for distance is obviously voltage and the type of reader that you have. So with what we have here that we're going to demo is the encrypted version, but credit to Bishop Fox and the research previously before him, he was able to put together the first long range reader for low frequency.
Absolutely.
So we're going to step it up a little bit, talk about advancing those attacks beyond just the unencrypted clear BS that people have been talking about for years.
Yeah, because anybody in here can go buy a Proxmark and attack those 80% of companies in the U.S., you know. So we want to show you how to get after the other percentage. So this is where we started with. We had a need for this. The first really, one of the jobs that we really wanted to get into a secure facility, they were not using Prox, so we took the Proxmark and threw it away. Just like that. So they were using iClass. So we're thinking, oh, iClass, this is kind of interesting. So they have encryption, you know, the reader and the card share this private key. So
Private key. We'll get to that.
So one of the attacks that we did is to take this big reader and put it into a backpack. All this is off the shelf, nothing fancy. In this version we're showing, it's just an Arduino Uno and an off-the-shelf iClass long-range reader that they use in parking decks. And if you get one, when it warms up, it's supposed to make this noise. Don't know why.
HID never answered us when we called them.
I don't know. Let me go to the next slide.
Yeah.
Yeah, so again, all off-the-shelf stuff. So as you can see, this is the first layout that we made. This is kind of like the lab unit that we set up. So just an Uno, it's got a contrast switch on it, and it's got some connectors so you can connect the wiring and things in. Because what we found out is, as you can see in this demo here, the wires are just plugged into the Uno. So if you're walking around, you have that one chance, you know, creepy smoker guy, have to get in somebody's, you know, bubble, get a cigarette from them, then you don't want that read to fail. So we noticed that it's, you know, there's so many wires, you can see here, that we We got in, used Fritzing, and we designed this board using this setup.
Whatever. Yep. Good enough.
Yeah. And how it works is you power it with a battery, and it always, with all these readers, there's just two wires that typically go to them, is the green and white wire. That's the Wiegand, data one, data zero. So the trailing falling edge is what we look for in the Arduino. And I'm going to attempt to demo it.
And a thing to note when you're building this, at the end of the talk, we'll give a URL off of GitHub to pull down the code that Josh has been putting together. So you guys can go out and buy yourself an Arduino, put the code on it, buy a reader, and you've got the full setup.
Yeah, I mean, what, $200-$300 probably?
Yeah, the reader's the biggest expense.
Yeah, and we'll put up all the Fritzing stuff too so you can make your own PCBs. And that way you don't have all these wires because, again, it's really hard to keep those wires in it. So what we want to show is with the long range reader, before you're within an inch, maybe 2 inches, rubbing somebody's ass. With the long range reader, you can get, within someone's
That's
bubble.
This close. Can I bum a light?
Yeah.
Right there.
Sure you can, bro. Smoke with me, man. It works.
All right. So something Josh added, and that was actually the demo. Something Josh added that was necessary for us in the field is if you're walking through a crowd of people, you're going to get multiple reads and need some kind of offline storage. So LCD having access to what was read just now, if you have it out in the open, also having the ability to hook up an SD card to it, writes it all to a flat file. Go back to the van, parse through it, find out what cards you need, make your card with some of the other stuff we're going to show you, walk back into the building 5 minutes later.
Yes.
We heard there were new speakers
here. Over here. Long-time listener, first-time caller. Yeah.
First one failed. Tossed it. This is going to piss Rob off. Where you at, Rob? Stand up.
So we actually,
Who? Deuce. When?
So we have another special edition of Shot the Noob because in addition to having two new speakers, we also have a new speaker goon, Scout. So if everybody could please welcome Scout.
Yeah!
We haven't destroyed her yet, but there's always time.
Don't take it yet.
Fuck.
We all good?
All right.
If I puke, I'm just
Some love for
back.
Our new speakers, please.
Just one more. Just want to do one more.
You know what?
No, I'm just kidding. No. No, I don't want to bring him. Don't want to bring that guy out. I'm from Alabama. Ha.
What was that?
Didn't you hear? I'm giving the rest of your talk.
Sweet. Not that good anyway.
I'll drop the mic.
We're out.
Awesome. All right. Where are we at?
Yes, you were.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
You want to hook up and show? No. So, all these things we're talking about today, we get serious now, get all intimate.
Get your serious face on.
All the things we're talking about today around iClass, it's pretty sad, which, hence the slide.
Panda.
It came out in 2010, and this is the part where we're probably gonna piss them off, but HID has known about the vulnerability with iClass and the encryption of HID, or of iClass, for 4 years. And the current technologies that Josh was showing in the previous slides with the multi-card formats, the higher bit lengths, longer facility codes, longer range of user codes, all those things have been built upon a foundation that has been flawed since 2010. In 2010, what started it all was a paper that came out called Heart of Darkness. And these guys put in heavy, heavy research on how iClass and the protocol works. What they found was the first revision of readers that came out had the serial interface still enabled. By finding that, they then found out how to dump the firmware. Once they found the firmware, they found the encryption keys in the firmware. So the encryption keys were leaked out, indirectly leaked out, since 2010. The process to obtain them is nothing more than go and read the paper, get the right hardware and the cable we searched all over for. Once we have that, we were then able to hook up to the Revision A reader, dump the firmware, get the encryption key. At that point, we had the encryption key to write our own cards. So now we're HID pretty much.
So there's a couple different ways to do this. You want to get China set up? Mm-hmm. This is a couple different ways you go about it. And there's two or three papers out on how to do it. Here's the thing. If you're going to do it, you have to have a Revision A reader that you can plug into the ICSP interface with a FTDI cable.
Right.
And it uses a bit bang method. So there is copy protection on the firmware. So the way that a couple guys got around that is they were basically taking two readers and putting some jumps and stuff in the first one and getting part of it and then getting part of the second one. So it's going to trash both readers. We've got, I mean, a stack of these old hardware that we've just burned down. They're no good anymore. But
one of them was burned on accident by
whatever.
Somebody that grounded to the wrong one.
Yeah, so you got to be careful playing this stuff. They are sensitive electronics. So if you're messing around with it and you plug into the wrong hole or you touch the wrong wire, it's going to just brick.
Just don't touch that wire.
The reader. What we want to show here is, so you can, you know, you can spend your 3 months like we did, you know, in the lab, staying up all night, reversing this stuff, trying to figure it out. Or you can go online and buy one from China for $300. Already got the key in it.
So with the China hardware that you buy, you actually buy a stock OmniKey 5321, pretty cheap, $40-$50, I think. Standard reader from HID. Also has the ability to write, but it requires a custom driver. So you're paying China for the custom driver. And you're also paying China to use the stolen key that's been out there since 2010.
Yeah, if you wanted to do this yourself, you could get the reader and is it VC contactless demo EXE?
Yep.
That HID's pretty much yanked that off the internet, so if you need a copy, just ask for it, somebody I know. So what you do is, if you've already got the key, you just put it in that software, and it's actually doing the same thing we're doing here.
So
we just buy it.
Pretty straightforward interface, other than it spits up Chinese that I can't understand sometimes. We have a valid badge. It's an I-Class badge. Just got
so
stolen.
So sensitive, though.
Badges in, opens a mag lock. Good to go, right? So if you can acquire one of these cards through various techniques, either steal it, read it, show up through some kind of social engineering attack and get a visitor badge, all you need is what kind of card type they have and the facility code and a valid access number. From then, you can do whatever you want, and we'll show how to modify some of those characteristics of the cards. So we've acquired a particular card somehow, whatever the attack vector may be. We have a card. At that point, Chinese software works pretty straightforward. I can see it. And we read. Can't see the screen. Fucking demos.
Oh, we're going to get one.
So we get a full read on the card.
Yeah.
If you want to go and clone the card at that point, works pretty simple. Take a card that doesn't work. Stick it on there. And then we're essentially going to take... I should have worn my glasses. Oh, God. Don't do that.
I like how that worked out.
Yeah.
Yeah. We got a fix for that.
Now, you know what the fix is? It's the little nipple on Lenovo's, not on the damn.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Just need that little nipple right there. Fuck that
nipple. Any problems? You should probably email them real fast. Maybe we can get them.
Yeah. So,
fix us up.
Get a read on the card. Jesus.
Eric.
And all we're associated with, you want to explain the blocks? 1, 2, 6, 7, 8.
Yeah, we're not really interested in all the blocks on the card. We're just really interested in the blocks, like 2 through 9, that contain the facility code, the user ID, your thumbprint, and the key pad number you put in there. That's the ones that we like. So we're essentially just reading and taking those and making a pure Christ. Copy of this one. Yeah. We should probably add another demo.
Wow. This is awesome. So, how you guys doing? Where'd you go last night?
How you doing? What that bee thing you got going?
Fucking mouth is going crazy. What the fuck? This is stupid.
Whatever. Just trash it.
Whatever. Fuck that demo. We're going to show you the one that's much better.
Yeah, fuck that demo.
So
you can clone the card, which is good,
that's
right?
That's what they say.
Yeah. It's so, supposedly it works anyway, in the lab.
Got it. Anyway.
So you can take Eric's card and clone it, but what if that don't get you into the data center? What if you need to modify a card, Eric? What would you do then?
We got the right answer. So China works great, whatever. Laptop sucks.
Time for the black box.
Done with that laptop. So
for the black box.
What we decided to do was go one step further. And we did all this bullshit that took a lot more time.
Yeah, you can see half that
and
shit don't work.
The fact that I run that Chinese software on an XP laptop because it requires XP and it never gets hooked to the internet. So that laptop's busted, as you can see. The mouse is broken too, apparently.
It's busted now.
Oh, it's definitely busted now. So what we've decided to do is go one step further. And we get into several situations with iClass. We can either read long range. We can also obtain certain pieces of information from maybe a direct attack against the badge system. We can also take a picture. We can use the reseller to look up the information for us. Whatever it takes to get certain pieces of data that we need to make a card.
If you happen to just... So Corporate 1000, let me explain one thing about that while you're setting up. So Corporate 1000, what that is HID's way of having the facility code be unique. So it's a 35-bit card, it's iClass. So the facility code is unique and tied to those 1,000 companies that sign up for this. So their idea was, you know, the biggest 1,000 companies will be assigned these unique facility codes, and we're going to track those or whatever in this database. So what happens if you get a hold of that database?
You sell it.
Exactly. So you'd have all the 1,000, you know, biggest organizations, private and government, you would have their facility code. So out of that, you would have two out of the three things we need, the 35-bit card type and the facility code. So then all you would need is user IDs.
So we said the hell with the Chinese device, and we put together another device that's essentially a reader with some custom software and custom drivers.
The Honey Badger.
We call it the Honey Badger because it takes what it wants.
Yeah.
And we take, valid card opens the door. This bitch will work, guaranteed.
Guaranteed.
Blank, I'm putting it out there, guaranteed.
Guaranteed.
Does not get us in right now. So, the way it works is we take the reader, or we take the card.
You gotta connect to it.
I'm already good. Oh, damn it.
Guarantees it works.
Bam, I got green.
Yeah, I should bet on that.
So, we take read on the card. We now have all the properties for that card. We know the facility code is 898. We know the card number is 34835. So we've read every memory block off that card. And as Josh was saying before, only certain blocks on that card are really important to us. Block 7 being the primary block that we really care about. And block 7 contains access card number and, or facility code and access card number. So when we get to the next step of modifying those things, you'll see how that works. But right now we're just gonna do a raw dump of the card and then a raw clone. So we've already read the card. We then take one that does not work that was supposed to work for China.
Does not work.
China sucks. Take that. Stick that on there. There's the one that works still. We get the CSN number off of that card, which is essentially just a unique serial number for that particular card. Put it in write mode. We write each block, which is much better than copy and paste with the China
process. Yeah, who needs no quantum physics when you can just push buttons?
New card cloned.
Bam! Yeah! Shit worked.
So we've essentially just done a pure clone. Well, maybe that card only gets me into the building, doesn't get me data center access. But through other means of acquiring information about a particular person, whether you directly attack them through some kind of spear phish, or you popped a badge system, or potentially you pulled maybe a badge report that had, you know, John Doe has access to data center or has access to human resources or whatever business unit you might be going after, or whatever facility you're going after. Once you know your target and know that particular data, maybe you only need to modify just the card number. So what we're gonna do here is take same facility code, but through some kind of fucking projector. Through some kind of intelligence gathering, we find that a particular user also has the 898-34835, which we just cloned. It also has one more. 898-1337. So that's the one we want to modify. So we change our card number to 1337.
And the
silly code stays the same?
No, I changed it.
Oh, you changed it.
Just to be a badass.
Well, that's not going to work in a bad system. So 898 we already acquired from a clone, a read, a picture, a lookup through a reseller, whatever it might be. We know facility code. Now we know that we need to make a badge to match a certain badge number, access card number. We know 1337 is supposed to get us into the system, and we modify that particular block. Using the stolen encryption keys, we calculate Wigan. We also update the block 7. Then we take a new blank card. God damn it, this fucking thing.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
Make our new card offline back in the mysterious white van that's in the parking lot.
Free candy.
Free candy's always good. We're just writing the same blocks in the previous card that we already read. And then we write block 7. We'll talk about 8 and 9 in a few minutes. So we've written a new block 7 with a different access card number. Modified that by doing the calculations that you can get from the Heart of Darkness paper. Talks about how Wigan works, how the encryption keys work. Once we've updated block 7, which is supposed to match what that new card number is, now that guy gets in, has a different badge number. That worked.
Yeah!
Yeah, Rick.
So, privilege escalation. Various ways to get into the facility. Acquire the information, make the card offline, walk back in. You can also use it when you're on site. Potentially you've gotten into the building, but now you can't get past bio, two-pin, you know, whatever, two-factor authentication with pin, whatever it might be. We'll talk about some of that too. But you've obtained enough information to make a modified card. Do that offline. Now you have something that's buffed, has additional rights, whatever it might be. One thing we're working on right now to note is the ability to, the problem with iClass versus low frequency Prox 2. When McAfee or Foundstone came out with ProxBrute, that was easy to do because it's all unencrypted. You don't have to calculate that block 7 each time for each authentication attempt. The problem with doing iClass brooting is you have to calculate that block ahead of time and then have that in some kind of list that is going to present that card type each time you try to brute through the reader. So a lot of calculations done offline, have that data ready to go, then present that through a device that you can walk up to a reader and do the same thing with that ProxBrute does, but now you're doing encrypted authentication. So we're working on that right now, something that looks like it's going to happen, but we're still working out the kinks. We just did privilege escalation, we got out of order a little bit.
We'll
talk about more vulnerability.
Yep, so as we mentioned earlier, from the controller to the reader, that is all unencrypted, clear text. So all you have to do is tie into that, and you're able to identify whatever comes over the line, so the facility code and the user ID. So any way you can get into the facility and find those lines, which typically go back to a little small closet somewhere that nobody ever goes into, if you can get in there and tap the, all you need is two wires, the yellow and the green wire, that's the only two wires you need. You tap those two, you can pull back and exfiltrate the user ID and the facility code.
And essentially all you're doing is getting between the reader and the controller. And typically, like Josh said, those are buried in a wall, they're buried in a telco closet, wherever that controller might be. But if you have the luxury of being able to get access to that back end when authentication stops, at that point it's all clear text Wigan, you can alligator clip into the wires, pull the data.
Or if there's not a camera, you can just take the reader right off and do it right there.
Never done that before.
Not happening. So, go ahead. You got this.
So, we've talked a little bit about some of these already. We got plenty of time, so we're good. The goal here is to stress how blended attacks work and the value you get out of those types of things, showing those to your clients or your company you work for. We showed how leakage on eBay and leakage through resellers and possible compromise of that database could lead to some kind of data access and data leakage. Using that data, you could then modify certain aspects of card types. Also, if you find that they're rolling from, like Josh said before, if they're rolling from an older infrastructure to a newer infrastructure, you can take those things and modify certain properties of the cards to match what they're rolling to that might be at a new facility you're trying to go after. So using things that you may acquire through electronic access could turn into physical access. So keep those things in mind when you're looking at badge systems, is it doesn't stop at just a clone. clones and reeds and brooding and modification and privilege escalation could come from other aspects, which may be physical or social or electronic, and where they blend together is how these things come to materialize.
Yeah, real quick story. So one time, old badass here, he ended up, we were doing a red team test for a really good client. We ended up popping them remotely, getting DA in like 7 minutes. So then Eric gets on the badge system and we pull out all their facility code, their card type, and their user ranges before ever going on site.
Yeah.
So we took that back to our lab. We wrote everybody a card. Not only wrote a card, we took their badge template picture and took our faces and put on it. So we had their real badge layout.
And then we modified the picture that was on the badge system that you'd see if they were running a certain badge system that had a picture that pops up. A lot of companies you guys work for probably have a picture that pops up at the front desk when you're walking in. If you compromise a badge system, modify that picture, when you walk in with a badge you made, your picture matches. No one's going to stop you. So
all five of us show up with pre-made badges in a really tight facility and badged in and out all week. Never got called.
Yeah, we were there to do an internal pin and we had our own badges for the whole week.
So, yeah, it makes things a lot easier to show up with your own badge.
So some of the things to focus on here that we want to stress a little bit is around activity monitoring for badge systems. This is something we've seen as a big gap in this space. Badge systems are limited in the amount of information they make readily available by default, like anything. But there's certain things you can look for if you're managing these types of systems to identify an attack before it materializes. If you're doing things like Proxbrute and you roll up to a reader and you present 1,000 attempts, that should trigger something, right?
Should.
There's really no IPS type of solution out for badge systems. So the vendors essentially leave it up to the operators of the applications to make their own signatures, make their own monitoring, their own alerting to say, why did this thing just receive 500 failed attempts and all of a sudden the door opened? Or why did Josh badge in the US and an hour later he badged in China? So there's certain things that should raise red flags in these badge systems. And that's one of the limitations we've seen right now testing, you know, all the commercial grade badge systems we've seen, they just don't have that built in natively. So big gap there. So monitoring, like anything, is always important.
Yeah, when we showed up to that facility, all five of us used the same user.
Yep. And then The other thing that we're pretty adamant about doing when we do acquire a badge, Josh decided to break into a building one time on an engagement with me and came in the front door as the bug man.
Oh, yeah,
and
bug man.
Once he acquired a visitor badge at the front desk, he left. Came back to the truck. We used that visitor badge to get a read. We knew the facility code at that point, and we already knew an access card number we wanted to try based on a previous attack we did, or we pulled it, however we got it. We made the card and went back in. So we had two ways to get in. We had one, we took a visitor badge that had basic access to the facility. We cloned that and made our own visitor badge. Then we used the badge system to elevate rights for the badge. We went and added data center access. We added other facilities because we had the badge system. So there's things we'll talk about here in a minute around protecting the badge system itself, but those types of things should identify a red flag too. Someone that's had basic level access for 3 months all of a sudden has data center access. Why isn't that thing tripping an alarm? Just like in many of your environments, you probably have an alarm if someone gets added to domain admins group or a new user is created and added to that group. Those things trigger if you're using, you know, whatever technology you're using for monitoring and SIM. That type of activity monitoring should be included in badge systems too. Talk about these.
Yeah, so this is one thing that we're working on right now. And again, this talk was supposed to be, you know, just around stuff that we know that works. Stuff that's real world, stuff that we've used, stuff that'll get you into a building. So the next area that we're working on right now is the bio stuff. So the biometric, your fingerprint, and the keypad. So the issue typically with this is that when you go to set up your fingerprint, you'll have a reader just like this. You'll put your finger on it and you'll enroll yourself. So that gets written to the card.
And so that block 8 and 9 that we showed earlier, that is just all Fs right now, 8 and 9 would be where bio is stored, whether it's biometric, PIN, whatever that second factor is, those are stored in those blocks.
Yeah, and we can't say that every badge system is configured that way, but the majority of systems, it's going to authenticate with, or it's going to verify your thumbprint that's on that card. It's just a thumbprint template, or the key code that you put in on the card, not going back across the wire, not looking at the database. Some of them will, you know, go look at key, the actual key that you put in. Yeah. But the majority that we've looked at so far just verifies that the key and the thumbprint matches the card that you just presented with. So if it does, then it sends Wigan back to the back end.
So stress that again. The pin and the fingerprint is an electronic signature that's written to a block on the card. So if I clone Josh's badge and I then write my own pin or my own electronic signature of my fingerprint to my card, when I authenticate to the badge system, it's validating on client side, not server side.
Yeah.
So I'm telling the badge system who I am, even though I'm lying. So there's issues that we've seen on our two-factor right now.
2 minutes.
Cool.
So this is, we're gonna wrap up here, but the other thing that we're working on is, so we go and we clone a badge, or we go and we read a badge in the parking lot, right? Well, how do we get that back to the van, back to the team? So what we're working on is taking Zigbee, and basically if it's in within Comlink, it will take, and as soon as it gets a read, it'll transmit it back or transmit it to the other team members and then write the card on the spot. So you know when you get a buzz in your pocket that you've already received the facility code user ID and it writes your card, you just then pull that card out of your inner pocket and you badge in.
Yep, so if someone's in the field walking around with a mysterious clipboard or they have their long range reader in their satchel, then they can send that back over 3G, Wi-Fi, Zigbee, whatever it might be.
Yep. One of the other things is backdooring a reader. So if you have access to a reader, you can get in super easy. All you need is those two wires, red and green Wigan wires. You can backdoor it, have it talk wireless, Zigbee or whatever, back to the cloud.
Mitigation we'll go through quickly because there's not a lot. Obviously, the little 35-cent shield around your badge is important. Protecting physical access to the badge is important. Protecting visible access to the badge is also important because of the reseller of the issues we've seen. Being able to identify what kind of badge it is and the information that's on it just from an order number on the bottom that's printed. But the big one that we want to stress here is protect the badge system. This thing is the holy grail of how the hell people come in and out of your building. And if this thing isn't air-gapped, isn't two-factor authenticated, if it's part of your domain, if you know too many people have access to it, if no one's monitoring it, if it's not you know segmented properly with VLANs and things like that, it's going to get attacked. And if we're doing a job, we're going after the badge system. So protect.
And you get in the badge system, say we're internal or external, don't matter. Say you get in the badge system, there's other things you can do without having to have a card. You can pop doors. You can clean logs.
Yep.
You can set up a new user and elevate your own privileges that way.
And then the last one that I wanted to stress here real quick, and then we're done, is the training the staff. The big issue we always see is the isolation between who manages a facility and who manages corporate security. Facilities are always a third-party company that's you know, in charge of watching the front desk and the visitor logs, things like that. They don't communicate well with who runs corporate security. And we tend to make the joke that we always play therapist, but having communication between those two groups is key because protecting this type of stuff is in their hands, not corporate security all the time. And there's a big gap between those two clients or two groups. And then last but not least, there's a URL on the bottom. That's where you can pull the code for the Arduino for doing the long range reads. It's basically just our company name at the end. So github.com/Lara's Consulting. That's it.
All right.